Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with your host, the Honorable Sam Rohrer, President of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues impacting our economy, our homes, our churches, our culture, and our daily lives from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Stand in the Gap Today, transforming the culture one heart at a time.
Well, what does, get this now, ladies and gentlemen, former Prime Minister Talleyrand of the Kingdom of France in his address on foreign policy in Vienna in 1814 have in common with President Trump's approach to foreign policy, as we just saw witnessed in his State of the Union address? You say, why in the world go back that far? Well, we're going to learn about that in just a minute. But the reason for looking at it is that there is something in common, and really it's profound. And I'm going to share what this commonality is in just a moment with our special guest for the day, E.J. Kimmel. He is the director of the Israel Victory Project for the Middle East Forum. He's also president of EJK Strategies, a national security and government affairs consulting firm in Washington, D.C. And then we're going to go to the one location in the world with E.J. where all eyes are focused, and they are going to be increasingly focused, and that's on the Middle East. And we're going to look at the imminent conflicts facing Israel, who they are, when it may be, and with what do they threaten this important land. That's going to be in segment two. Then we're going to look at the enemies of Israel, who are closer to us in the United States than any of us would like to believe. Actually, they're at our doorstep. And we're going to then conclude in the last segment with the information relative to Israel and what I'm terming the elusive peace deal. The theme for today's program is Israel, imminent threats, elusive peace. And with that roadmap for today's program, I welcome you to Stand in the Gap Today. I'm Sam Rohrer, host of Stand in the Gap Today, which is now heard on nearly 450 stations in all 50 states. It's also heard in our nation's capital, and it's heard around the world via the Internet. And to assist me now in this special focus today, I want to welcome in E.J. Kimmel. E.J., thanks for being with me today throughout the program. It's a privilege to have you on.
Yeah, privilege to be here. Thanks, Sam.
Well, we've got a lot to go over, E.J., and I think that you are eminently qualified to cover with us these various areas of theme and approach here today. And I want to start right out here in this first segment by asking you to comment on an article that you wrote that really caught my attention some time ago. You actually entitled this article, quote, "Trump is echoing Talleyrand in his Middle East diplomacy." That's right, Talleyrand, end quote. That was your title. That was a little bit of intriguing. You had the picture of Talleyrand there, and I had actually to look that up. Most people wouldn't have any idea who Talleyrand was. But he goes back into 1814. He was with the Kingdom of France, and he made a foreign policy speech, which you likened to and you hearkened to. Why did you write that? And share with us, if you could, what that message is that you're saying President Trump is echoing that Talleyrand made and made famous back in 1814.
Well, appreciate you taking the time to research it. And it's certainly not a quote that people are familiar with when it was actually spoken. My father has talked to me about this for my entire life, learning it himself when he was in school in 1962. And, you know, this was at the Congress of Vienna in resolving the end of the war. And there was two proposals, one by a person, last name of Metternich, and one by Talleyrand. And the ambassadors there decided to go along with Metternich's proposal. But Talleyrand agreed to that proposal on the condition that when these ambassadors were going to decide on how this war should be concluded, what the terms should be, he required that there be a proposition that it should conform to the public law. And the response from those that were there said, well, it goes without saying that it would conform to the public law. And Talleyrand's point is, if it goes without saying, it would go better by saying it. And when you look at President Trump and his whole approach to foreign policy, he is saying those things that go without saying. But as I think we're seeing today, it does go better by actually saying it. If you look at, let's go out of the Middle East and go to Iran. Let's go to North Korea, specifically North Korea and China. We've had presidents for decades trying to deal with the North Korean problem. And there's been criticism of President Trump's approach for using Twitter to go after the leader of North Korea. And the Chinese, though, have stood in the way of a lot of action against the North Koreans. So President Trump called it out. And now what we're seeing today is the Chinese, while not to the extent that the United States would like, has gone much bolder in their activity to pressure the North Korean regime today. We're seeing it with Iran and the nuclear deal. Just today, I believe the British foreign minister mentioned that they are working on the concerns that the United States has with the Iranian nuclear deal and called upon Iran not to sort of provoke things in the region. So by actually pushing things out into the forefront and actually saying those things and forcing people to acknowledge hearing it, he is causing people to actually respond to the world's problems. And I think it's a refreshing sign.
You know, and I'm glad you picked it up, because that's what caught my eye when you wrote that article. And that's saying, if it goes without saying, then it's better saying it. And people have wondered about what it is that's different about what the president's doing. And yeah, you mentioned referencing the tweets and so forth, the technique of communicating has been different. But I think it does. I agree with you that it goes to the heart of these issues. A lot of the tweets that he's made are things that are actually true, but you don't hear it. But when you do hear it, you agree with it. And I think that's what's happening here. Now, when you consider this whole idea of it goes without saying, what about the enemies of freedom when they hear what's taking place? My guess is that these enemies of freedom, even though they're being highlighted by the president, they're not going to go away without a fight. What is it doing to the enemies of freedom?
Well, it's flipping the script on them. They understand the way that our government operates. They understand how our political system operates. You know, many of the enemies today that we're facing, you know, they are fully engaged in political warfare. And they know that certain actions that they will take will not receive much of a public response. And so long as there's no public response to it, they're able to continue this operation. And we're seeing this happen, you know, with the Palestinian Authority today. We're seeing this happen through the Muslim Brotherhood, through Turkey. What's happening is they have to recalculate their approach to taking on the United States. And we're seeing it with Russia as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Stand in the Gap today. I'm Sam Rohr, and my special guest today is E.J. Kimball. He's the director of the Israel Victory Project for the Middle East Forum. Our theme for the day, Israel, Imminent Threats, Elusive Peace. And we just talked about this whole principle. Some things go without saying, but if it does, it's better saying it. We're going to talk about the imminent conflicts and why we need to say it. Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Thank you, Sam, and thank you to the team that you have working with you. I'll tell you one thing about your show. You accomplish more in less time to advance the gospel and to advance knowledge and understanding of seriously any radio show I know of. So congratulations.
Those kind words from Congressman Michelle Bachmann summarize what our guests say about Stand in the Gap today. This is Sam Rohr. On this program, we bring honest analysis of today's news to you and millions of Americans every day. With a newspaper in one hand and the Word of God in the other, we connect the dots between what's happening and what God says about what's happening in light of the Bible and the Constitution. From the mouths of our co-hosts, all preachers, whether former members of the House of Representatives or an evangelist to a millennial pastor or a senior pastor of 40 years, Stand in the Gap today is here for you. Unique, current, trustworthy. Pray for us. Stand with us financially by going to standinthegapradio.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. For more information, visit our website at standinthegapradio.com.
You ever have a personal enemy so hateful towards you that he wished you were dead? And that he tried to repeatedly kill you no matter what you could do or ever tried to do, and you couldn't make him stop trying the plotting to kill you or your family? Likely very few, and thankfully so, listening to me right now, have ever experienced such a dilemma. I know I haven't, and I'm glad I haven't. Yet the nation of Israel has faced this nightmare over and over again. And they do it right now, as I speak right now on this program, with enemies like the Palestinians, Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran, and others who have sworn to destroy them, continually plotting to kill them, and they're right now swearing that they're going to take action against them. In this segment, I want to focus on this theme, Israel, the imminent conflicts. Why should we know this? And why should we be caring at all about Israel and caring about the Middle East? You know, if you listen to this program very often, you know we cover this area of the world. We cover this nation regularly. And we do it because of its biblical importance. We call it because of its strategic importance. But we also call it because in a practical way, as I'm going to say it, because as so goes Israel, so goes the world. Think about that. I really think that's true. And to help me examine the imminent threats facing this nation of Israel, just a little bit more than bigger than the size of New Jersey, is a friend of Stand in the Gap Radio and one of the better experts on Israel in the Middle East that I've come to know, E.J. Kimmel. He's the director of the Israel Victory Project for Middle East Forum, and he's also president of EJK Strategies, a national securities government affairs consulting firm, which is located in Washington, D.C. So, EJ, let's pick up on this now as we focus on Israel, the Middle East, and imminent threats. If you look at Israel and consider the imminent threats, some which I mentioned perhaps there by its various members, I'd like you to do this. I'd like for you to first name those threats and rank them in order of what the danger they pose to Israel. So do whatever you want to do in this regard, but identify and rank.
Sure. So the threats, there's obviously many of them right now. You've got Iran, you've got their proxy Hezbollah, you have Hamas, you have the Palestinian Authority today, which most people wouldn't necessarily call them an enemy of Israel, but it is clear from their actions that they do not recognize the Jewish state, nor have the intent at the moment to do so, and they are, I would call them, an enemy of Israel. I don't know if you would call it an enemy of Israel, but certainly enablers of those would be the United Nations, the broader international community in Europe that condemns Israel for all of its activities. And then you have countries in the Middle East, some that are operating in the Middle East, like Russia, you have Turkey, and you have the Middle East countries, you know, that don't have peace deals with Israel right now, Qatar, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and some others. I would say, though, if you're ranking the most imminent threats, I would probably put Iran at number one and number two and probably number three. And let me tell you, let me tell you why. Iran poses multiple threats to Israel. Obviously, people are focused on the nuclear threat to Israel that if and when Iran has a nuclear weapon, that they can, that they will focus that on Israel to destroy the Jewish state. Number two, though, is their move across the region through Iraq, in Syria, in Yemen, in Lebanon, to surround Israel, and as I mentioned on previous shows, also to surround Saudi Arabia. But their spread through the region onto Israel's borders is an imminent threat that supports the activities of both Hezbollah and supports the activities of Hamas in Gaza through the funding mechanism. So you have Iran as the linchpin. They are the largest state sponsor of terrorism in the world today. And they are the linchpin that poses the most imminent threat to the Jewish state of Israel and, quite frankly, to the entire world.
Well, I think, EJ, that's a great way. I didn't know exactly where you were going to go on that, but I would just summarize what you're saying. You're saying Iran. I asked you to rank Iran number one, Iran number two, and Iran number three. That's pretty good to easy for people to remember. I also like the fact that you identified Iran and their proxies as enemies, but you identified the United Nations and the European Union as enablers. I think that's also a very good word, because they have been involved in this as well. And then you mentioned others, participants somewhat, to some degree, Russia, Qatar, Saudi Arabia. I think it's a great way for people to frame how we're looking. You know, a lot of the problem that people have with the Middle East is they don't know how to view it. It seems to be confusing. I think that is clear here. Now, let me go here to another aspect of it. You did not mention directly Lebanon, but I'm going to bring up Lebanon right now, because just the other day, that Lebanon's higher defense council, I'm actually going to read from an article I looked at right here. It said that on Wednesday, this would have been 2 days ago, that Lebanon's higher defense council ordered the army, their army, to prevent Israel from building a border wall on Lebanese territory. The council announced that if Israel does build its border wall on what Beirut views as Lebanese territory, it would be considered as an Israeli act of aggression, and they said that they would act to prevent Israel from building such a wall on Lebanese land at the frontier, threatening an offshore energy block and disputed water, a number of things. Well, Israel came back and said, look, we're not doing that. Well, Lebanon, I would have to say, no, that they're not either. But this was a direct threat that they're going to use their military to oppose something that Israel's doing. Where does Lebanon sit in this mix?
Well, Hezbollah has, for all intents and purposes, taken over control of the country. And the Iranians, as their sort of their parent here, supporting those activities, are in control of Lebanese activity. And they are looking for an excuse. They're looking to frame the narrative to launch an attack on Israel that can be blamed on Israel. And so they've been taking some provocative actions recently. They there is some disputed waters in the Mediterranean that Lebanon is opening up for energy exploration. And the Israelis have warned them that not to do this. And they have already asked for U.S. mediation in resolving this territorial dispute in the waters. Israel is building, you know, as you mentioned, this fence along the border with Lebanon, because Hezbollah is in direct violation of the UN resolutions after the recent war about a decade ago that called for this area in southern Lebanon to be, you know, essentially a demilitarized zone. And Israel is preparing for the next war that is going to come from Lebanon through Hezbollah and their activities there. So they, it seems to me that what's happening in Hamas is doing the same thing in Gaza, where they are talking saber-rattling that, you know, the likelihood of a war breaking out is at about 95%. You know, where is that coming from? Because it's not Israel threatening to go into Gaza. That's only coming from Hamas and Hezbollah trying to start a narrative that war is on the horizon and to place that blame on Israel, because they understand that the international community will blame Israel if they have a reason to do it.
So in reality, EJ, you said Iran, 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 enemy of Israel, number one, number two, number three. They've got their proxies, Hezbollah. There's a connection with Hamas. I brought up Lebanon, but you're saying, in effect, Lebanon is controlled by Hezbollah, which is controlled by Iran. So should we almost be thinking, when we think of Lebanon now in today's economy, we should think of Lebanon as the same as Iran almost? Really is what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty close. But one little distinction there. While Hezbollah is certainly the proxy of Iran, the way that they operate, Hezbollah has the autonomy to determine its operation so long as it's moving towards the Iranian goal. So there's no micromanaging going on, but certainly if, for example, if Hezbollah were to announce that they were ready to make peace with Israel and recognize it, Nasrallah would no longer be the head of Hezbollah. Let's just put it that way. But so long as they are pursuing the objective, they have pretty broad autonomy to determine the direction to follow.
Okay. All right. Now, I want to go a step further right here. Iran, Iran, Iran. You did say that Iran is a threat to the world.
Mm-hmm.
You're describing that whole circumstance there right now. Iran has also said to Israel, you're the little Satan. We want to destroy you. They're putting these players in place all around them. They want the bomb in order to do that. But they have also said to the United States, we want to destroy you. You're the great Satan. A lot of people would wonder about this. What is Iran actually doing other than threatening to get nuclear weapons? Are they closer at hand to the United States than what most people would think? Because we want to talk about this. Tell me about this.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. They are operating in the United States itself. That has been confirmed by our law enforcement and intelligence agencies. And they have built a dramatic network throughout Latin America, which gets very little coverage, although now it is starting to percolate up in the Congress and in the administration.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go right there next. When we come back after the break with E.J. Kimball, we're going to go to what Iran is doing in us and to our south. You do need to know what's happening, because what they're threatening Israel with, they're also threatening us with.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, discussing the pressing issues facing our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Now let's rejoin our host.
If you're just joining us, we want to thank you for being a part of Stand in the Gap today. I'm Sam Rohr, and my special guest is E.J. Kimball. He is the director of Israel Victory Project for the Middle East Forum. And our theme today is on Israel now, our threat, the imminent threat, and the elusive peace. We just concluded our discussion about the imminent threats, who they are in the Middle East. And if I could summarize, based on what EJ has said and what we've talked a lot about on this program, it is Iran, number one. Number two, it's Iran. Number three, it's Iran and its proxies underneath of them. We set up in the last segment, though, that Iran has threatened Israel. We know that. They've threatened to eliminate them from the face of the earth. But they've also threatened the United States as the great Satan to eliminate us from the face of the earth. That's why they are such a serious threat to the entire world, but particularly to Israel and to the United States. Now, if you've just joined us here on this program, I want to, again, like I say, welcome you, but also encourage you to listen to the entire program if you're just joining us, on our website in our archive form by going to standinthegapradio.com. You can also go to our free app if you haven't downloaded it on your smartphone. Please do that. Easy to do. Just go to your app store, put in the phrase Stand in the Gap. You can listen then to this program and all of the programs that we carry, and we cover all of the themes at your convenience. You can also participate with us there by communication and by financial support, which we do need your financial support to keep this program on the air. If you like what you're hearing, we want you to come alongside of us. Now, what we set up in the last segment is something that EJ mentioned, and we've talked about in the program before. This threat of Iran, this threat of Iran is not just the Middle East. It's us here. But we too often think that, well, they're over there and they can reach us by a missile, so as long as we keep them from getting a nuclear weapon, we're safe. Not so. And EJ, I want to go back to you right now and have you expand upon this. You mentioned that Iran is actually in this country. You mentioned that they are to our southern border. Be more precise if you could and build that out, please.
Sure. The common understanding of Iran and specifically Hezbollah's activity in the southern hemisphere in Latin America is the tri-border region, that border between Argentina, Paraguay, and Uruguay. But that's not the extent of it. It's actually much broader than just that region. The Hezbollah network and the ISIS network, they are throughout Latin America right now, and heavily involved in the activity happening in Venezuela, the civil war going on. Iran is directly involved in fomenting that, and they are not the only external actor operating there. You have China and you have Russia involved as well, let alone Cuba. But it's important to understand historically that the way that this network has been built, everyone focuses on the narco-terrorism, on the narco-trafficking. And there's another part that is is missed, which is the licit activities, the legal activities. In fact, as you certainly know, and I'm sure some of your listeners do as well, in 1992, the Israeli embassy in Argentina was attacked. And in 1994, the Amia bombing occurred in Argentina by Iran. And how did that happen? How did they get that network in place? It was through a legal beef trade. Argentina became the chief beef exporter to Iran. And the Iranians, as a Muslim country, told the Argentinians to comply with Islamic standards, the halal standards. We need inspectors at varying stages of the process. And the Argentinians said, sure. And so you had their intelligence agencies come into the country under legal cover as cultural attachés, and they built up a gigantic network over the course of a decade in Argentina, all through legal activity. And today, that network has spread into Venezuela, it's in Brazil, it's in Peru. There was recently a Hezbollah operative caught in Peru who's currently on trial there for being a member of Hezbollah. So the network is quite broad, and also the idea that there is ISIS and Hezbollah operating there together, it's a different world in Latin America. The whole Sunni-Shia difference sort of disappears because they're there for a common purpose, which is to build a network in our southern hemisphere. And as Iran is pressured in the nuclear deal, as that changes, Iran is getting their forward operating army prepared. That is the goal for this.
EJ, what you're just saying right there is not in the news. And ladies and gentlemen, we're sharing this with you today because we believe that if you are a Christian patriot, someone who loves America, somebody who loves Israel, you need to know these things are just not covered. Now, EJ, I'm going to read something here, just a short bit. This was from Mike Pompeo. He said this back on August 13th of last year. And he said, from an intelligence perspective, we've watched in my 7 months of office a continued deterioration. He's talking about what's happening in Venezuela that you mentioned. He said there, and I'm leaving a bunch of things out, he said, Venezuela could very much become a major risk for the United States of America. Now get this, the Cubans are there. The Russians are there. The Iranians are there. Hezbollah is there. This is something that has a risk of getting to a very, very bad place. So America needs to take this very seriously, end quote. That was a quote from Mike Pompeo, who leads now the CIA. He's talking about this, and there's some other articles talking about all that's happening in Venezuela. But you mentioned, I'm just using that to confirm what you're saying. The Russians, the Iranians, Hezbollah, and all of that are right below our southern border. Now, you referenced a little bit what they are doing. I went a little bit further. Why are they there, and what is their goal? In other words, what are they trying to do? You establish a beachhead, something Mike Pompeo would seem to suggest, and you did too. But build that out more of the why are they there, and why are they such a concern here?
Sure. Let me get to that in one second. I do want to just bring up that there is some attention coming to this. The House Financial Services Committee is holding a hearing on Thursday at 2 p.m. Entitled Exploring the Financial Nexus of Terrorism, Drug Trafficking, and Organized Crime, with a focus on Hezbollah as a transnational criminal organization, which is a technical thing which most people and I don't even fully understand, but it allows law enforcement, if they are designated as such, which is different from being designated a terrorist organization, allows more law enforcement tools to be utilized to shut down more of their banking networks. So getting back to your question, why are they here and what do they want? They are violating the Monroe Doctrine. What was the Monroe Doctrine's purpose? Keep the bad guys out of our hemisphere. So long as they're overseas, we can always be in our own hemisphere and we don't have to worry about the threats coming to us. This is a blatant violation of that Monroe Doctrine, which has essentially been ignored, although now this administration seems to be paying some more attention to our southern hemisphere, a lot more attention than past administrations. And the goal is to build a network here to be able to attack in case, you know, essentially as their forward operating army. If they're able to foment, as they are doing, this humanitarian crisis in Venezuela, where it is impossible to vet these people, these refugees, it's impossible to, who are you going to go to find out their identities? It's very similar to what has happened in Syria with the refugees there, which, again, we don't know who these people are because there's no central authority that we can go to. And in Venezuela, they have been working with the Iranians for well over a decade, if not 2 decades. And they have built an intertwined network of Venezuelan and Iranians, specifically Hezbollah through Lebanon. And they have built new identities for these people to be able to travel back and forth. So as they foment this crisis and this refugee crisis builds out, what will happen, and we're seeing it today, Brazil is bringing some military up to the border, and they are going to try to help with this refugee crisis to resettle them. Colombia is dealing with it. But when it hits a critical mass, a lot of these refugees are going to come where? To the United States. And if you think that everyone that will be coming from that refugee population are innocent people, you know, that's the same sort of theory that has driven the whole Syrian refugee crisis. The enemy knows what they're doing, and they are using our humanitarian appeals to exploit our system.
And EJ, to back up what you're saying, I'm reading an article right here that says what we're beginning to learn is that Venezuela has employed propaganda tactics to conceal its relationship with Arabic countries. In one Venezuelan city, estimated 300,000 Syrians reside there. Under the banner of Iranians, Lebanese, and Iraqis who've been imported into Venezuela by this dictatorship, supporting everything that you're saying, EJ. Ladies and gentlemen, we share this with you because you need to know Iran is not just a threat of Israel. They're a threat of the United States. They're here. They're gathering their forces just to the south of us. This is why we need to encourage our president and this administration to take action against them. Now, we're going to go in this next section. We're going to go back over to Israel, and we're going to talk about the elusive peace deal. How close to peace are we over there?
Hello, I'm Pastor Gary Dahl of the Faith Baptist Church of Altoona, Pennsylvania. On January the 22nd of 1973, a terrible thing happened in Washington, D.C. That was when the United States Supreme Court, in the Roe v. Wade decision, legalized death through abortion in all 50 states of the Union for the full 9 months of pregnancy, and thus ruled that a woman had a right to privacy broad enough to include aborting an innocent child from her womb. Now that was 45 years ago, and since that time, over 60 million babies have been killed under the guise of a medical procedure. But abortion is nothing less than murder, as life begins in the womb at the point of conception, which is clearly taught in the Bible and can be proven through medical science. The act of innocently killing an unborn child in its mother's womb is an abomination to God and will bring judgment upon our beloved nation. Without a doubt, Roe v. Wade must be reversed. But how can Roe v. Wade be reversed, you ask? Well, consider the following points. Number one, Christians must stand up and speak out against this great abomination by telling others that God is the author of life and death, and that as human beings we do not have the right to kill at all, including abortion, infanticide, suicide, euthanasia, physician-assisted suicide, homicide, or any other form of murder. Number two, Christians must evangelize those who are lost in their sins, because those who know Christ will not consider abortion. Number three, Christians must pray that legislators and judges on the state and the federal levels will reject abortion and uphold life. Number four, Christians must consider running for office so as to bring the light of the gospel into the dark halls of government. Number five, Christians must pray that God will raise up a band of other Christians to run for office who will stand for biblical principles. And number six, Christians must lead our nation in repentance and confession of the sin of legalizing abortion and murder. Will you do your part? Don't delay. Start today. I'm Pastor Gary Dull. God bless you. And remember to keep looking up.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, as we now go into our final segment here on Stand in the Gap Today, our theme has been surrounding Israel. Imminent threats, elusive peace. That's our theme here for today. We started in Israel identifying its enemies, being Iran, 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 according to E.J. Kimball, who is our special guest today. He's the director of the Israel Victory Project for the Middle East Forum. That was a great way to start it because that really establishes the threat in the Middle East. Many of other little players, but that's really where that's the head of the snake. We, in our last segment here, we talked about how that same head of that snake, Iran, is over here to our southern border, Venezuela. Heavy operation there in the whole Latin America area. There's a concern on the behalf of Brazil, of Argentina, our nation, certainly, but very few people know about it. They must know about it because they are here in the form of Hezbollah and others and actually infiltrating our southern border. We've talked about it before. There are many thousands of Hezbollah that have come across the border into our nation. That's Iran. And they are here not for the purpose of wishing Americans well, believe me. But we're going to go back to Israel right now, because on that part of the matter of the optimistic side there with peace, I've said here at the beginning, the reason we go often to Israel is that as so goes Israel, so goes the world. It seems that when Israel's at peace, the world's at peace. When Israel's at war, the world's at war. Since Israel's regathering officially in 1948, literally every president has attempted to arrange a peace treaty with Israel and her neighbors. All have failed. But now enter Donald Trump. He also wants peace in the Middle East, and perhaps since Harry Truman, we've not had a president more committed to Israel than Donald Trump. But Trump is different in many ways from other presidents. We talked about that at the beginning of the segment in an article that E.J. wrote, hearkening back to the days of Talleyrand of France of 1814, where he made a statement that some things go without saying, but if they need to go without saying, it's probably better to say them. Donald Trump's been saying certain things, and it both aligns the friends, and it also tells the enemies where things are. Well, this peace arrangement, or this pursuit of peace, is one thing I want to conclude the program with today by asking EJ to give some comment on where we are and what I'm calling the elusive peace deal. EJ, as we go here right now, Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian leader, went ballistic after President Trump recognized Jerusalem as the capital. In matter of fact, when Vice President Pence just a couple weeks ago spoke to the Israeli Knesset, Mahmoud Abbas was up in the European Union begging for their support for the Palestinians and for condemning that move regarding Jerusalem and so forth. He very clearly has positioned himself against any solution offering peace between the Palestinian Authority, at least, and Israel. But he's not the only player, but he's the main player. So I just want you for right now, bring us up to date on that. Is Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority any closer to peace arrangement now than they were, say, that 2 months ago?
No, and I would actually say that they're no closer to peace today than they were 25 years ago. I would actually say when the Oslo Accords were signed that they were closer to peace then. And since that negotiation started, over final status issues, the prospects of peace have gone further and further away. And, you know, as I've talked on the show before, as the director of the Israel Victory Project for the Middle East Forum, we are seeking to create a new paradigm in which to resolve the conflict, away from painful concessions by Israel and a focus on the rejectionism of the Jewish state by the Palestinians. That until the Palestinians accept the legitimacy and the reality that the Jewish state of Israel is here, it's permanent, it's not going anywhere, once they accept that reality, then the war will be over. And it's not going to be a quick thing that happens in the next year or 2 years. This is going to be something that takes time because it's actions that are going to be required. You know, one specific thing that the Palestinians could do to show that they have ended their rejectionism, have on their maps of the territory, have Israel actually on the map. Have them on the map as opposed to the whole land being called Palestine and with the Palestinian flag. So I don't think we're Mahmoud Abbas certainly is not someone who will be making a peace deal with Israel. I think what's important now, the way that President Trump has approached this, is he is taking actions. As I mentioned in the article, those things that go without saying, he's saying them. Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. It is an undeniable fact. People don't want to admit it, but everyone understands that that is the truth. The European countries understand that's the truth. The Arab countries understand that's the truth. And when Mahmoud Abbas went to Europe, and he has been going to his Arab brothers and asking them to push the United States out of this process because he's afraid of President Trump and where he is going with this ultimate deal that he's pursuing, the Europeans said, we will work alongside the United States. The Jordanians said the United States has to be involved. Why? Because no one cares that much about the Palestinian people. It is something that has been known for generations. The Palestinians were used as a pawn by the Arab countries to keep their people at bay, focused on Israel rather than on their own leadership. And now what's happening today, as the threat from Iran has germinated and these Arab countries look around and say, you know what? Israel is just not a threat to us, but they are part of the solution. They are part of the solution to end the Iranian penetration into the Arab world. And that is what the Palestinian Authority is waking up to today.
So, EJ, is Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority, are they being encouraged by any other Arab country around there to recognize Israel, or are they being encouraged not to?
So the countries that are sort of in the axis against the recognition or normalization, I would say, maybe not recognition, that might be too strong of a word, but against the normalization would be Iran, it would be Turkey, it would be Qatar. The countries that are working more towards this normalization would be Saudi Arabia, you have Jordan, you have Egypt. Those countries understand the threat from Iran, and they understand the value that Israel poses. And what you're seeing today is an isolated Palestinian Authority. As President Trump's looking for this deal, it's not a deal that he will present that will be a final status deal, that it's a take it or leave it. It appears at the moment that this is going to be a regional agreement, that if the Palestinians decide, you know what, we're not even going to entertain this, then they won't be involved in it, but it will be a regional deal that the Saudis will take part in and other Arab countries will take part in to start normalizing those relationships. It's not going to be a deal that gets signed and all of a sudden all arms are going to be laid down. But that's a very realistic assessment of the situation. There are many people who's,
EJ, that's okay. We're just about to run out of time right here. So in effect, what you're saying, it may not be a peace treaty as most people are thinking, but it could be a peace deal of a regional affair. Give your website for people to go to if you want, EJ, please.
Yes, you can go to meforum.org. You can also follow on Twitter at meforum and at Kimball, KIMBALLEJ.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Stand in the Gap today. We're now at the end of the week, the end of the program. You're listening to Sam Rohr, special guest, EJ Kimball. Again, go to the website, standinthegapradio.com, pick up this archive program, listen to it again, forward it to your friends anywhere you can. And until we meet again on Monday, stand in the gap for truth where you are over this weekend.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap Today. Stand in the Gap Today is another quality ministry of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues affecting the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. We take seriously the command to be salt and light and the mission to declare truth in the public square. Stand in the Gap Radio is supported through the prayers and tax-deductible financial gifts from listeners like you. Would you please consider a donation to help us increase our outreach of biblical truth? To learn more about us and make your donation, please visit standinthegapradio.com. You may also give from our smartphone app. Download the Stand in the Gap app. Search for it in your web store under the heading Stand in the Gap. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in every weekday at the same time for Stand in the Gap Today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.